Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you, as usual. And, Jim, it's not often that we disagree. And a few weeks ago, we did in the wake of Mark Sanford winning his runoff against Curtis Bostick and eventually facing Elizabeth Colbert Bush, the sister of Stephen Colbert, for this open house seat in South Carolina's first congressional district. And it looked as though, especially once those trespassing charges got filed by Sanford's ex-wife, this was going to be a dicey proposition. But the district is very conservative. And last night, as the results came in, not only did Colbert Bush not do well in the areas that she needed to, she didn't win any county or any portion of the counties that comprise this district. Sanford wins by 10 points, and here was his message upon victory.
I am one imperfect man, saved by God's grace, but one who has a conviction on the importance of doing something about spending in Washington, D.C.
And so there you go. Mark Sanford, I think, will vote the way that most conservatives would hope that a congressperson would vote. Whether he remains a lightning rod for the media and Democrats, who knows? But the Democrats did not get this seat, and that is great news.
It is, and Greg, I will quote the Democratic candidate's brother and begin by saying I accept your apology. Look, for those who still have who still just can't get past the notion of what Mark Sanford did, this is three times this year he's gone before the voters of this district and said, look, you know my record, you know the good parts of me, you know the bad parts of me, and, you know, I put myself before you for your judgment. And three times, twice in a Republican primary, the original primary, and then the runoff, and then in this general election, the voters of the district said, you know what, we don't like this, but we think there's more to you than this. We remember you as 8 years of governor, 6 years as a member of Congress, and being a pretty tough-minded budget hawk on matters like this, and saying, let's elect this guy. And I think that there are some very big upsides to this for folks on the right. First of all, if you're a backer of Bill Clinton or Anthony Weiner or Elliot Spitzer or any of these folks, I don't want to hear any grief from you about Mark Sanford. You know, Jonah has a very good post in the corner today talking about liberals insisting the conservatives live up to standards that they themselves do not believe are important or relevant. The other, you know, big spin coming out last night is that, well, look, this was always a very conservative district, and everybody knew that, you know, Sanford was probably going to win. Horse pucky. The Democrats spent a grand total of about $2 million in this race, both when you add up all the donations to Elizabeth Colbert Bush and outside expenditures attacking Sanford. So as I put it last night, dear PCCC, you just spent, you know, in the neighborhood of $2 million to lose to Mark Sanford. They have good reason to have a great deal of recrimination today. In retrospect, they can ask themselves, should we really have been putting a great deal of effort into this district from the first place? Mark Sanford managed to win this not by Jedi mind-tricking the electorate to forget about his past indiscretions and problems, but by pointing out, look, this is about what kind of votes you want cast on your behalf in Congress, and arguing that Elizabeth Colbert Bush would be a vote for Nancy Pelosi and the Obama agenda. And lo and behold, that still resonates. That still resonates in red districts, and my guess is that still resonates in a lot of purple districts. And so it's not surprising in the end. Elizabeth Colbert Bush tried to run a basically an issue-free campaign. They asked her why she was a Democrat. She had to talk about happy memories of John F. Kennedy being president of the United States. Well, that was back from 1960 to 1963. Some of us have noticed that the Democratic Party is not the same party as it was back in the early 1960s. So I think it says something kind of about leveling with the voters, about who you are and what you stand for and what you want to do when you're once you're in office. And I think also kind of is a nice slam against the politics of celebrity, that ultimately Stephen Colbert was not a very big factor in this race. And the voters in this district weren't all that impressed by it as much as the mainstream media was. So undoubtedly, I'm doing quite a bit of gloating over this, Greg, and I'm probably going to be insufferable for a couple of days. But I really do believe that this was, you know, for all the flaws of Sanford, there were a lot of important lessons coming out of this race. And that is, Pelosi is still toxic, and that ultimately, when you're running, you can't beat something with nothing. You have to come out and tell the voters where you stand. And ultimately, you know, Elizabeth Colbert Bush basically wanted the voters to just take her on faith that she'd be a not too liberal Democrat. And, you know, the voters just weren't buying that.
I think the potential for him being a lightning rod is still there, but he will vote the way that I think we want him to vote 99.9% of the time. And I'll give Mark Sanford a tremendous amount of credit. He worked his tail off in this race. He went door to door. He went house to house. He probably shook more hands than every other candidate combined in this race. And that was a lot of candidates when this thing started. So he didn't win it just on name recognition. He didn't win it just on promises. He actually went and specifically asked people for their votes. And that's what you have to do in terms of retail politics. And he proved why he's been good at that for a long time. So I definitely give credit where credit is due there. On to Martini number two now. And today, of course, are the much anticipated Benghazi hearings before the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. But Jim, we already know what the Democratic strategy is. The State Department has already put out pre-buttal statements to some of the opening statements that they're expecting from these witnesses. And the Democrats on this committee are already coming out with a smokescreen for the president and for Hillary Clinton. This morning on the number one news station in Washington, WTOP, Jerry Connolly, a local congressman here in Virginia who's on this committee, says this is nothing but a Republican witch hunt designed to damage Hillary Clinton before 2016. So apparently the lives of four Americans, the lies of the administration, certainly as it pertains to the video, but also among many other things, apparently doesn't matter as long as Obama won and Hillary is not overly scarred by this.
We're going to see basically either one side or the other is being honest about this. So let me observe. Hillary Rosen, who you may recall from saying that Ann Romney never worked a day in her life,
right,
is now a CNN contributor. And one of her comments today was that, you know, of course, this is a partisan farce. Daryl Issa is refusing to allow Pickering, who was head of the so-called independent review of the State Department, to testify. Well, Jonathan Carl just reported that the committee has released a letter inviting him dated the 22nd of February. If that is the case, then this is a bunch of horse bucky being put out by the likes of Hillary Rosen and the Democrats. Either he was invited to investigate or he wasn't. For the State Department and other Democrats to claim, well, you haven't invited so-and-so. Like, that's almost an amateurish, you know, claim here. So beyond that, you know, if you look, there's nothing preventing him from testifying some other time. And so let's get Pickering in front of these guys. As far as I understand it, ISA wants this guy in front of it. I'm also already being told that Fox is beginning to cover the beginning of the hearing, whereas, you know, MSNBC is still reporting from the horrible events out in Cleveland. We'll see if MSNBC has any interest in what's going on in these Benghazi hearings or whether they, you know, are going to go into full propaganda mode. Kind of, you know, disconcerting to see so many folks in the press strangely disinterested in what the witnesses have to say in this hearing.
All right, on to the crazy martini now, and we go back to South Carolina politics. This is completely unrelated to the Mark Sanford race. Dick Harpootlian has been a longtime fixture in Democratic politics. Until very recently, he was once again the chairman of the Democratic Party. A couple of days ago, he was introducing a state senator in South Carolina that he hopes will be the next governor of South Carolina, and here's how that came out.
And about 18 months from now, hopefully he will have sent Nikki Haley back to wherever the hell she came from.
Nikki Haley, of course, if anyone doesn't know, is of Indian descent. She was born in America, but her parents were Sikh immigrants. She is now, I believe, Roman Catholic, but obviously of Indian heritage. So there's clearly the intent that, you know, she's not really an American there. So then he attempted to clarify in an appearance on MSNBC, and it only got worse.
She's from Bamberg, South Carolina, where she was an accountant in her parents' clothing store called Exotica. And all I'm suggesting is she needs to go back to being an accountant in a dress store rather than being this fraud of a governor that we have.
So he's not a racist, Jim. He's just a sexist.
Well, you took away my punchline, Greg.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Harpootlian has a kind of a long history of making these kinds of statements. Apparently, he's used the word retard rather casually and offended other folks. So he is a guy who definitely is a bit of a loose cannon once his mouth starts moving. I suppose it could be entirely coincidental that when discussing an Indian American governor, he just happens to say, "Go back where she's from." Because, yeah, there's no code words. There's no subtext there. Wasn't it saying that, you know, Obama golfs a lot was called a racist attack because it was somehow tying Barack Obama to Tiger Woods? There was some lunatic on MSNBC who was making that argument. Well, here we have, you know, another one in which we're supposed to be told that there's absolutely nothing. And then when Harpootlian decides to explain it more, he meant all he was saying is that a very accomplished professional woman of Indian American heritage should go back to making dresses. That's way better, isn't it, Greg? Doesn't that make you feel much more reassured? Oh, that's what you meant, Dick Harpootlian. Yes, now we understand you.
If that weren't enough, then you go to the coverage of this, which has been relatively minimal. There's more coverage of the Sanford story and certainly of the events out in Cleveland and all this other stuff that's happened in the last couple of days. But a moment of honesty on the Morning Joe panel today with Mika Brzezinski, Mark Halperin's in there, along with Mike Barnicle, who really provides the zinger here. Listen to this.
That's a gaffe at best.
Say something different.
Yeah, and say that.
Yeah.
How about just, I'm really sorry. That was the wrong choice of words,
yeah.
And I am so sorry.
Betty says it today.
What, yeah.
I bet he does.
I think
you're,
he might.
But you're right, Mika. Role play that. Flip the roles.
Oh, my Lord.
Republican. The head of the Republican Party in the state of
Texas. Oh,
right.
We would have led with it.
Yeah.
That was Barnicle there with, we would have led with it. Willie Geist was in there on the panel as well, saying that obviously it would have been different if the party situation had been reversed. So I don't know whether to be happy that they understand that they're biased or the fact that they fully admit that they cover things differently based on which party's in the wrong here.
That's swell, guys. Now try doing something about it. Let's treat this like it's a big deal. Or alternatively, next time, you know, some Republican says something. There was a good article on, I believe, cracked.com, which is a pretty funny humor site. They often have a little bit of insight, in which they said ways you can tell you're hearing an article that is mostly nonsense is if you see the word lawmaker in headline, meaning that if any politician you'd heard of had said it, you know, you'd be like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe Chris Christie said that. You know, when it's lawmaker, it usually means some state lawmaker who you've never heard of and who you're probably never going to hear from again, who has said something inane. And, you know, sadly, we have, you know, several thousand state lawmakers in this country. And, you know, then you throw up all the local lawmakers and city councilmen. And all that. Sooner or later, one of them is going to say something stupid. And, you know, there certainly should be consequences for that. Apparently, there was some lunatic Republican in the state legislature up in New Hampshire who was speculating kind of the truth or vein of her comments on Boston. And that's, you know, that's terrible. We basically should not decide that this, you know, one lunatic represents a whole party when the other side, well, no, it's just this isolated incident and not really worth talking about or something. A chairman of a state party making not so veiled racist or sexist comments about a governor, I think that is a big deal. At least, you know, mention something. And we shouldn't treat it as, you know, DEFCON. Is DEFCON 1 or 5 the big one, Greg? I always mix them up.
I think the higher the number, so DEFCON 5 I think is worth.
Okay. In other words, I keep saying, oh, my goodness, it's DEFCON 1. Everyone's like, Jim, that's the calm one. Point being, we shouldn't treat it as a really huge deal when one party does it and, you know, nothing to worry about when another party does it. This is nothing really that new for Harpootly, and he's almost gotten the state to be kind of used to him making these kinds of outbursts. And it's, you know, a little troubling. And I think it says something that there's this perception that, well, as long as you're in the right party, you can't really be racist. And I think that, you know, comments like this Harpootlians kind of expose the inanity of that notion.
Yeah. And apparently last year, Nikki Haley gave a press conference from the basement of the NASCAR Hall of Fame. And as a result of that, he suggested that she was in the bunker a la Eva Braun.
This guy is outlandish and
the pattern.
Obnoxious comments are what we can come to expect from Dick. And, you know.
Jim, we'll leave it there. We'll be back at it tomorrow. Have a good one.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Karembas of Radio America. Please join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.